Hello, everyone, and welcome to another insightful episode of Coffee with Convery. Today, we're delighted to introduce you to Andrew Neary, a dynamic force in the world of journalism and entrepreneurship. Andrew's journey is nothing short of inspiring. As a second-year journalism mass media student, he's not only excelling academically, but also has earned the prestigious Student of the Year Award for college and CGIP Will. Will is work integrated learning, for those of you who don't know what Will is. What truly sets Andrew apart is his unwavering commitment to making entrepreneurship accessible to all. Through his groundbreaking podcast, Founders Drive, he amplifies voices often unheard, showcasing his dedication to equity and inclusion. As a senior producer of Founders Drive, Andrew's leadership has been pivotal. His ability to forge meaningful industry connections has not only expanded the podcast reach, but has also opened doors for future students through valuable Will opportunities. Andrew's impact extends far beyond his local community. His collaboration with organizations like Futurepreneur has also led to the establishment of a Microland Fund for Indigenous entrepreneurs, underscoring his commitment to inclusive prosperity. In recognition of his outstanding contributions, Andrew has rightfully earned the title of Student of the Year. His story serves as a beacon of hope and inspiration, reminding all of us the transformative power of resilience, determination, and a passion for making a difference. Andrew, welcome to the
Well, Ryan, thank you so much. That's a lot. Hopefully, I can live up to that.
podcast. Oh, I'm sure you can. We're going to dive right in and you're going to tell us all about yourself here. So, first off, let's do a few rapid fire questions, get things going. So, what are your pronouns?
I'm he, him.
He, him. What is your superpower?
That's a tough one. I'd say connecting people. I really appreciate just the effect of introducing someone to someone else and seeing what they can do together. Networking is one of my favorite things. So probably that.
That's a great superpower. Connecting others and seeing that dynamic relationship build is so cool to watch. Favorite smell?
Oh, that's a good one. 100%, it's freshly ground medium roast coffee in the morning.
Medium roast. See, I'm a dark roast guy, but I'll let you go with the medium. Best compliment you've ever received.
Oh wow, that's tough too. I think for me it was a story that I was working on about Indigenous heritage and healing, and just like reconnecting with heritage through making traditional clothing. And it was a difficult story, but I was able to meet some people involved in it through going to another event and building some relationships. And one of the people that I interviewed actually emailed my professor, just with gratitude and thanks, saying that, I was somebody who came in authentically and I spent the time to get to know people. I wasn't just there to steal the story or ex be extractive with my storytelling. And I think about that a lot, and it has definitely informed the way that I try to tell all my stories. So.
Wow, that's awesome. We all have sort of like a guilty pleasure or a go-to snack. What is yours?
My ideal, answer would be popcorn, but my honest answer is whatever the latest Oreo flavor is, like Space Dunk, all on
I saw that in the store. What is that actually? I
It's like
walked.
it's a trip. It's a trip for sure. It's
Okay.
like Pop Rocks in the cream, and oh, it's weird.
Oh my gosh. I wondered if that's what it was because I saw the packaging and it reminded me of that. But yeah, Oreo's doing quite a few funky things with their flavors lately. It's kind of cool.
100%.
That's good. Favorite subject in school?
Ooh, in high school, it was chemistry all the way. And I hated English, so didn't think I would end up here. But then I got really deep into computer science, and now as I'm studying, I'd say my favorite class is media production.
Nice, nice. We all started somewhere. What was your very first job?
Oh, EB Games. Back in the day,
Okay.
electronic compete games. I don't think they're called that anymore. But I was selling games to folks and rating them, and it was a good time.
That's cool. If you had to describe yourself, let's say in one word, what would you pick?
That's a tough one. I mean, my mind goes to human. I think just human is the
That's
best way
good.
to describe me.
No, I love that. I love that. That's a great word to describe yourself. Okay, so let's jump in and go back to your story and talk about like where it all began for you, where you grew up, and maybe just tell us a little bit about yourself.
This one's tough. I think, going back, my family My earliest memories were living in an apartment in Midland and Scarborough. I remember the first day we had lobster, live lobster at home, and I thought it was a pet. And that's like a formative memory for me for sure. Unfortunately, my parents split when I was young, and so we moved all over the place. We lived with my grandparents in Scarborough for a while, then out to Ajax, where I am now. But before kind of staying here, I was on a farm in Utica. I was in Bowmanville, BC for a little bit for work, and downtown Toronto for 2 years. So mostly the GTA, I'd say, is my formative experiences, but I've been around.
Yeah, lots of moving around and lots of lived experiences for you there, I gather.
For sure.
So let's talk a little bit about, sharing your journey into journalism and entrepreneurship and how these also intersected for your work with the Founders Drive, which, as we were getting started, we realized we were in the same room a couple weeks ago, which is kind of cool, talking about this, but not directly, obviously, but anyway, so tell us a little bit about how that all came together and, your journey into journalism and entrepreneurship as a start.
Yeah, it's been a really winding path, I think. So in high school, I was like really dealing with a lot of mental health challenges. I had some serious PTSD and struggles from my childhood, and I wasn't really sure what to do. I loved chemistry. I was super, super into chemistry. But I was kind of looking at, alternative options for a career, and I thought computer science would be the way to go. And I ended up getting into University of Toronto for computer science. And I was there for pretty much the full 4 years, but I was really struggling. And I didn't really get the help I need. I had like agoraphobia for a while, all of those different challenges. And in 2016, I ended up dropping out of university and not completing my bachelor's. I then went to Ontario Shores, which is like a mental health hospital in Whippy. And I did a partial hospitalization program for about 3 months, where I would go in every day for 8 hours. And then, it really, I think, it helped me a lot. I think I would say it saved my life, but it also helped me challenge a lot of stigma that I had about, mental illness in general. So my friends that I made there, they had schizophrenia or dissociative personality disorder, those things that I was afraid of before going in there. And my experience, being there day in, day out, meeting people, it really kind of was my first culture shock almost, or that stigma busting moment for me. I'll never forget that. And then immediately after finishing that, I felt so much better. It really worked for me, and I went out and found some work, and I did this internship with the town of Ajax, where it's called Up Next Ajax, and they ran it for a few years afterwards. I was like their second cohort ever. And basically they like took a bunch of students and people who were, underemployed or unemployed, and taught them about marketing, taught them about entrepreneurship as a way to try to, increase the like skill pool that they had, help people with getting employment. And I really focused on the entrepreneurship side of it. And I had this idea for like a board game cafe. I really wanted to start a space. I love board gaming. It became like a crucial part of my life during, all of my mental health moments. And I just found it like the bonding power of board games was amazing. The fact that you could sit down with someone you didn't know and connect over like a shared set of rules, and then like build a conversation and get to know each other, do it regularly. I thought it was really powerful. So I focused on that. I got a lot of really amazing connections from the town of Ajax, and I met some of the most important and influential mentors in my life there for sure. I really don't think you can do anything, or we don't do anything on our own, really. Like we're, a community, we're a social species, and I think that we lift each other up, and we're lifted up by sometimes invisible hands of those around us, but oftentimes the support of the people that are nearest to us. So I got a lot of support. And some of that was teaching me how to learn about coffee, because a board game cafe, maybe you want some coffee in there. And I didn't even drink coffee at that time. I don't know why I was so interested in having coffee as an element, but I had no idea what to do.
And here you
So
are on Coffee with Convery. So there's a theme here.
exactly, arguing about dark roast. But so I had this mentor who introduced me to a roaster in Vaughan, actually. At a Classic Gourmet Coffee. He taught me just like all of the baselines, what gourmet coffee was, what Italian coffee was like, what roasting meant, all that good stuff. And then I was like, I need to work in a cafe. So I, for roughly like 6 months, every weekend I would go try a different Toronto cafe, find my best ones, figure out what I liked about them, do all this research. And then I found one that I really, really liked. And I worked there for about 6 months, just learning how to do coffee. So they called me shot boy at first because I had to learn how to pull espresso shots and I didn't even know the drinks. So I had to learn all the drinks. But it was an awesome time and I put a lot into that and I met some great friends there and again got some awesome mentors like Yongsoo Kim at the time who went on to I think open a restaurant actually recently, so congrats to him. And then I felt pretty ready. I'd been saving up. I kind of left the industry for a minute and started working at a warehouse nearby my house, pulling as much overtime as I could, just trying to save up all the money possible. And so I finally hit the point where I could like get a loan to get things started. I reached out to some of my other connections from Up Next Ajax to try to get some space, and it all kind of came together for me. I had some really lucky breaks. I found used coffee equipment from a store that was unfortunately going out of business in Scarborough, and I think that really like helped make it possible for me. And I opened my board game cafe in 2019, so it was pretty cool. It
Yeah.
was, I called it Drinks and Dragons.
Okay. That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Wow. That's a, like quite a path to get there for that. That's pretty cool. And then, the whole journalism aspect and jumping into this founder's drive, how did that all happen?
Boy. So unfortunately, again, like I had kind of reached my dream, I felt like in 2019. But I think all of us kind of know what happened in 2020. And I was only a year old. It was the business's first anniversary in February 1st, 2020. So I had just hit profitability. Things were looking really good. And I had a big charity event planned for the special day of March 13th in 2020,
Gosh.
which was real good. And then we locked down and things got really tight. Financially, I had some rough negotiations with my landlord, and it didn't really work out. So fortunately, I had to close the business permanently. And I was sort of like looking for what else I could do, like what was going to be next for me. I ended up having to go bankrupt because the loans that I took out for the business were personally guaranteed. So I, they fell to me after the business shut down, and I didn't have any money because I put all of it into it. So I moved back in with my folks and I started looking at maybe going back to school for something. I pivoted and I actually opened a small like coffee roasting business out of my house, which was really fun. And it actually helped fund my school and also, any books and stuff that I needed to buy while I was studying. And I decided to go back for paramedic at first because I was 26 and I thought, it was something that I could do to help other people. I was really passionate about that, particularly from, running all these charity events through my business and the support that I was given. I really wanted to do things for others. And I decided to go to Durham College. It was really close by. It was a really reputable school, particularly for paramedics. And I thought it would be a nice choice for moving forward. I ended up connecting to, I'm just gonna close this window. I'm so sorry. I ended up connecting to the entrepreneurship office at Durham College called Fast Start. And there I met some of the most incredible people who are, currently my mentors, I would say, Jay Fisher and Danielle Harder. Danielle is a professor in the journalism program. And Jay is a student actually going for his PhD at Fleming right now, but he was a professor in entrepreneurship there. And they were helping me with my coffee roasting business. They're helping me with some volunteering. And that's when I first learned about Enactus. Which is a big student-led volunteer organization. But it's also where I realized that like I really like sharing stories and writing stories. And I picked this career that was really appealing. You could help people. But Danielle really taught me about how journalism could also help people and how it was an opportunity to share stories and how it was this like massively transferable skilled industry. Like anything you do in journalism, you could use in like 20,000 other ways, right? And particularly in business, telling the story of your business. So I won't say they tricked me, but they convinced me to transfer from paramedic to journalism. And that's kind of how I ended up in the program that I'm, in. I'm going to graduate in, 2 weeks, hopefully. So that's exciting.
Wow.
But then when it comes to Founders Drive, that was through the Enactus connection. I'd already started volunteering on another project, mentoring young people in high schools and encouraging them to start their own social innovation projects. And I had this idea. I was kind of talking to other students who were trying to start businesses, and they would always run into barriers and stop. So it was things like, I'm studying, I don't really have time for this, or I don't have money, I would really love to do this, I've got this great vision, but I just can't afford to get it going right now. And the school had so much support for free to help people get off the ground, but there was always that kind of that friction to get going. And I thought, why not share the stories of people who were successful? Like, we had this one student, Brittany Charlton. She runs O Foods today, and she was like top 30 under 30 in food on Forbes magazine.
Wow.
And she's in all the grocery stores nowadays with this inclusive snacking product. And I was like, what a great story. And she did that while she was studying paralegal at Durham College. What? So people need to hear this.
Yeah.
And Danielle agreed. But then she thought, like, why not go beyond just our school? Why not go beyond just students? Why not talk about all of entrepreneurship? And we really decided to get into that. So we were looking at accessible entrepreneurship and what that means. We met some really, really inspiring people like Taylor Lindsay Noel, who was a gymnast who unfortunately was paralyzed in a training accident. And now she runs like this massive tea company and has a cafe herself now and was on Oprah's favorite things list and is just this wonderful person, social media influencer, just trying to make a difference. And all of these other inspiring stories. And we're trying to share those. And now our project is in its second year. And we're really working with Indigenous entrepreneurship this time around. We met a few really awesome Indigenous entrepreneurs during the first season who kind of made us look at entrepreneurship differently. And so we're looking at how to learn about that right now and share those stories.
I love that because it's just an area that you don't hear much about. And so to venture into that and expose in a good way some of the things that are going on in the Indigenous cultures and people that are, of course, entrepreneurs, congratulations. That's awesome what you all are doing there. And it's such a great way to share and like back to the storytelling, right? People remember stories. So the fact that you're sharing people's stories for others to understand and maybe learn a little bit more about something or maybe learn something about themselves is incredible. Congratulations. That's really cool. I know you also recently, as we said in the beginning, you're the Student of the Year Award. Congratulations. That's pretty big deal. And for some of our listeners here who might be in school or considering work integrated learning opportunities, some schools offer those opportunities, like Durham and others, to participate. How has work integrated learning integrated into your own professional and academic trajectory?
Yeah, I think looking at it from a student perspective, when I was first trying to choose my school, I had never really imagined work integrated learning. I didn't know what that was, honestly. I was looking
Right.
at, what you run into at a university fair, that kind of thing. It doesn't seem like it's not talked about enough, but it is probably the most impactful part of my time at school. A lot of the professors in the journalism program, and it's kind of become almost a meme to us now. They say, don't let school happen to you, make it work for you. And I think that that's something that we all took to heart in our first year. There's a different bunch of different ways to experience university, college, high school. You can go to class, you can do your homework, you can go home, you can, go to class, make the most of it, make friends, put in that extracurricular time, find the things that, you find valuable, learn about yourself. And it's really about sort of taking advantage of those opportunities, I think. So coming back as a bit of a mature student as well, like I started again at DC at 26, which is definitely older. It wasn't old for paramedic, but it's old for journalism, which is funny. I really had this mindset where like I really wanted to make the most of my time at the school. And work integrated learning was something that I learned about through some professors. It wasn't obvious to me on my first day. But I was able to kind of get started with it through a project. And really, I think just like talking to profs, being there, being making like yourself known as someone who wants to volunteer and wants to help, looking for those opportunities, it kind of became available to me. The first project I was invited to work on was actually Founders Drive because it was growing really fast, and I was lucky enough to be through like whenever you go to, particularly most schools, they have like an incubation center. For us, it's FastStart, but many post-secondary schools have one. They'll help you look for those opportunities. And the folks working there knew about SeaWheel. And so when they had the podcast idea, entrepreneurial-minded folks, they wanted to make connections, have, solve problems, get things going. They made that connection for me. And Founders Drive was actually started up as a SeaWheel project. And so we were able to hire, in our first season, it was about 18 students, and pay them with a stipend to get to actually put the stuff that they were learning in their programs to work on the podcast. So people in video, people in photo, people in production, marketing students, they all got to do elements of the project, learning and getting credit in their classes.
Great.
It's so cool. A lot of people don't know about it. So I got to be like a major ambassador for SeaWheel. Definitely look into SeaWheel.
Absolutely. And what you did with it and giving all these roles and opportunities to students, it's amazing.
Yeah, we did kind of create, 18 different work integrated learning opportunities in just that first year. And then because of our success with that, a bunch of us were invited to work on future SeaWheel projects. So I worked on one about firefighting and making it safer with virtual reality. I was able to use the photo video stuff that I was learning in my program and my storytelling I was learning in journalism to tell the story of this project and capture these key moments. And again, support, there's like another 10 or so SeaWheel students that I was working with at different various elements of the project. And then this time around for season two of Founders Drive, we actually were able to grow the projects and we brought on 22 students, with more money for stipends and equipment and, continue that impact. So
It's
it's not just
amazing.
the school necessarily, I guess, that has to provide those SeaWheel opportunities to you. They're often looking for ways to make them.
That's great. And congratulations again. What a great story. And thank you for describing it more for people who are considering schools with work integrated learning programming and the benefits of that. Big part of entrepreneurship and just being a student and absorbing everything that you can about life is a mentor. And so what's your thoughts about mentorship and sources of inspiration? It sounds like there has been, but has there been any mentors that have been influential in your career and life, and what have they taught you?
Definitely. Yeah, I think everyone, the best thing you can do for yourself really is get a mentor or a coach. And I think it's also, most of us have mentors already. We just maybe haven't like defined them as such at the time yet. I think starting in high school, one of my teachers was actually sort of a mentor to me. My computer science prof, or teacher, I guess. What he, listened to a lot of stuff that I had to say about my life, what I was dealing with mental health wise, but then he also gave me a lot of guidance on, moving forward my career path, getting into post-secondary. And he helped me, I think, finish my high school time more successfully than I would have on my own, both as like a support system, but also as like a coach. And then when I went through that internship with the town of Ajax, I was able to meet some really well-connected folks through them, but also again just build relationships and had people at the town care for me. So there were folks like Andrew Poré, who is a senior economic developer at the time, and this guy Frank Adino, who is a local philanthropist, who still today I talk to regularly and still helps me with a lot. And then yeah, at the college now, Danielle has absolutely been a mentor to me, both as a professor in the program that I'm in, but outside, working on the Synactus projects and in life. What have they taught me specifically? I think the first was back when I was starting my business. It's okay to not know anything and just have an idea and a dream. Like, I think the first step of most like successful businesses is just taking the time to do the research. And I really didn't know that at first. So I thought like, I don't know anything about coffee. This won't actually happen. And it turns out you can learn that. So maybe you do. And Frank Adino was the one who made the connections to me to Classic Gourmet Coffee. And that's really where I started learning and learning how to learn about an industry that you're interested in, going from nothing to knowing it. And I think most of us, especially who are entrepreneurial minded, you have that idea of something you want to do, but you don't know how to get there. The road is really cloudy. And I think that's where like having a mentor really comes in, reaching out to somebody who's successful in that industry or who might know somebody who's successful in that industry. And then more often than not, they're really happy to talk to you and even follow up with you, keep you accountable to your dream. So I think that's one of the biggest things that they help with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think what's really cool about what you said too is that sometimes you have mentors, but you don't even know that you have mentors. And I think it's that mindset that, we have to put a label on something. But to your point, that sometimes when you're thinking and people listening to this podcast, there are people around you, if they're supporting you and they're someone you go to confide in or to share ideas or to get thoughts on things, that can be your mentor, right? And I think that, worrying about formalized and informalized mentorship, I think it's more about obviously the relationship and also the fact that it kind of grows organically, right? As you get to know someone.
100%. Yeah, completely agree.
Interesting. So, we talked a little bit about your childhood and growing up, and I know you've gone through a number of different things that you've had to overcome. How has that also shaped your resilience and determination, specifically in your entrepreneurial endeavors?
I mean, entrepreneurship is pretty hard. I think if it was easy, everyone would do it. And then early on, it was kind of described to me as like a roller coaster, or like you've got the really super highs, like, oh man, I made 1,000 sales today. And then you've got the like weeks of no sales and no one checking your website. And oh God, is this okay? So I think you do need a lot of resilience to sort of get through that and maybe be level-headed and okay while that's going on. And to me, going through it, it really reminded me of like depression and PTSD, honestly, because you've got those like mania and low moments. And so processing that really helped, I think, like going through mental health challenges and then building like coping skills and strategies there. And some of the most effective ones for me were like journaling, writing down every day how things went. And that was great for business too. How did my day go? What were my sales like? How did I feel about it? What did I do today towards my business? What did I do that really wasted time? Because that's definitely something that happens when you're your own boss too. So you got to be accountable somehow. And I think also just having that support network. I was really lucky in that my business was really social. And so I had like a bunch of regulars come by really early on and they would stay. I had somebody move their house to be closer to my cafe because they were there so much and they really liked it and it was their third place. So those people coming by, seeing your business, they were so encouraging, but also they were, social supports. They were my friends and they still are. Even without the business, we've all stayed in touch. So that, and then your mentor, I think just like those people that are in your life, they really help build that resilience. There's obviously going to be roadblocks and obstacles, and you can do everything right and you can still lose. But being, I think, honest with yourself, where things went wrong, what you could have done, learning, not beating yourself up, and then connecting with the people near you. Those are the things that really helped me. So I think that's probably what I would tell other people to try. And obviously not everything is going to work for everybody too, but maybe trying is the biggest part.
Great insights and advice. Thanks for sharing that. Indigenous Mayan students in Guatemala, like, talk about that. Like, what was that experience like?
So funny because like we that was in our first season as well when we first made connections to some Indigenous Mayan students in a village called Las Arrugas or a community called Las Arrugas in Guatemala. And we did some work with them. Basically we did a lot of work. It was really hard to explain it in our presentation at Enactus. So I understand the question. Essentially it's really about like making connections with other support systems that are already there and trying to leverage them. So the college has a relationship with this organization called Students Offering Support, and they do a lot of work in Guatemala. And one of our team members, Katie, had the opportunity to go to Guatemala with them on a project. There's a thing that the college does and a lot of schools do called a faculty-led classroom abroad, where again you get course credit, but you actually get to go on a trip somewhere and you get some intercultural and international experience above what you would get, on your standard program. And then you get to like, do something in addition. Usually it's a volunteer project or a way to help the community that you're with and also learn from them. So it's reciprocal because you're learning so much there. And we kind of learned about when Katie was there, these three young girls, Haiti, Gladys, and oh no, why am I blanking on the third girl's name? Haiti, Gladys, and Glenda. And they were basically high school students. They're mentoring elementary school students and trying to encourage people to stay in the school system because in remote Guatemala, many young girls especially drop out in like grade three to go get married. And so there's not very many people who stay in and then go and get skills to start careers. it's either, get married and farm and make textiles kind of thing. And they really wanted to. Haiti especially wanted to be a surgeon. And then they had this idea to start a business selling French fries to raise money for their schooling because it's very expensive. And but they needed some help getting started because they didn't really have any business experience. So we looked into it. We provided some mentorship ourselves on like how they could get started. We helped them investigate what it would cost, what it would look like. And then we found some funding for them to help them buy at least one fry like chip stand and get things moving. We helped send them laptops, both to help run their business, but also to like do their schooling because they would need a laptop for school. And we were able to get three of them, one for each of the girls. And then, kind of help them on their way. And then this year, a few more members of our team, including myself, we were able to go to Guatemala again, this time to another community that was a bit more remote, called San Felipe in Chenla. And again, here it was about sharing skills. So last semester, in our fall semester, we worked remotely, helping young people there tell stories with the stuff that we were learning in our program. About their community, about the things that they were seeing, and like leveraging their immense creative talent. And then this semester, we were able to actually go and visit and then continue like sharing skills about how to promote their message on social media, get it out there so people could see their content. So it was very cool. And then again, this year while we were there, we learned about Anna Romelia, who is a young girl who wants to go to school to be a civil engineer. Which is very expensive, and she would have to go super far away from the community to go to school to the university that teaches it. But she also was like missing a government ID. Like she had been accepted, but she needed a government ID to get in there. And two of us from the team were able to fundraise the money to help her get that ID so that she could continue moving on to the next step of her process and get started on her education. And now we're actually working on a scholarship to be able to help provide the money to go there for the 5 years that she needs to get the education. And just going every time has been incredible. Like we learned so much. Like every one of us has been changed forever. If you say the word Guatemala to Katie, she'll start crying. I'm pretty close to that. And I think, it's just you don't want to go into something like this or an international trip with like sort of the white savior complex a lot of us have. Like you're going to a community that, is poorer, but you're not there to like rescue people or save people because they don't need rescuing. You're there to share because you might have some skills that, aren't as common there. Particularly for us, just the time that we invested in the program in journalism and media art and design. But also we learned so much. Like I still remember, like I've been changed forever. To be this podcast would be 3 hours long if I were to share
No,
the
it's
stories.
awesome. Yeah, no,
But
I have to say the world needs more Andrews and Katies in the world. I mean, what you're
No.
doing is incredible. I honestly like, especially nowadays, it's just, hearing stories like you're describing, and even as you're talking about, even the words Guatemala and how that would bring you to a feeling, right? Like, I mean, it's incredible stuff that you all are doing and continue to do it. I mean, I think it's really impressive and really inspiring to see it. And wow, it sounds like I don't know. It's such a great thing you're doing. Thank you again. Thinking about entrepreneurials, young people listening to this podcast, there's a lot of young people who do look up and want to think about becoming an entrepreneur and what to do about it. Is there any like tips or tricks or advice on how to become an entrepreneur or anything that you've learned that you might want to share with the audience?
Wow. Yeah, I think starting out, like it's definitely there's a million different ways to do it, right? I don't think there's really like a wrong way to become an entrepreneur. I think it usually starts from a place of passion or interests, and I think it's really about fueling that. Obviously, if you've got a really big dream, it can be harder. There's bigger obstacles to do it, but I guess like the best tips I would say are like be curious about the thing that you want to do. Spend the time learning about it. Learn about the industry. Learn about what's out there already. Don't try not to make assumptions, or at least recognize when you are making assumptions, and then check for them, test them. Then I would say when you start to like actually get into it, look for the different sources of support that are out there. So we've got business advisory councils or small business enterprise centers across the country of Canada. Many places around the world have them as well, but they're opportunities for mentorship. They have workshops about specific skills, and they often have funding. A lot of the entrepreneurship centers in Ontario come with like $3,000 to $5,000 in grant money that you can get for going to these classes to help get you kickstarted. And then I would think one last tip would be if you've got a really big goal, think about the minimum viable product. So, is there like a single small thing you can do just to kind of get started and also get a feel for if it's right for you? For me, for the cafe, I started by doing pop-up events. I would go to like local bars and spaces. I'd bring a bunch of board games. I would plan a Dungeons and Dragons night, and I would promote it, and I would, sell tickets, and then just see if there was a demand for what I was doing. For coffee roasting, I had like a pilot cut product where I bought a bunch of beans, green beans. I roasted them, and then I just kind of sold a very small amount just to see, if people were interested in what I was doing, help me learn and develop my skills and get better at roasting, and get started somewhere. Eventually, I wanted to have a bunch of different products, and I got more products, but like start with that one thing just to kind of get the ball rolling is what I would say.
Very interesting. Great tips. Great advice there. Thank you for sharing that too. Futurepreneur, can you talk a little bit about, I know it created this microloan fund for Indigenous entrepreneurs, but can you, what inspired you for that partnership? And, could you talk a little bit more about how that all came together?
Yeah, hopefully, I won't go too long with this one.
Okay.
But back when we were thinking about season two of Founders Drive, being particularly for Indigenous entrepreneurship and learning about that, we all recognized that we were very ignorant. We didn't know very much about Indigenous culture. We didn't know very much about Indigenous entrepreneurship, and we knew that there were a bunch of different communities around us. For example, the Mississaugas Scugog Island First Nation is like right next to the college. But we had never been there. So we went out and we spent the entire summer last year in 2023 learning. We did workshops, we took classes, we did a course with the college about Indigenous culture. And I learned that Futurepreneur has an Indigenous loan program. I was actually a recipient of Futurepreneur as one of the loans to actually start my business, and I had a really good experience with them. So I thought, what else is out there? And they connected me to this guy, Jason McDonald, who lives in Akwesasne in the Quebec side of the territory. And he basically, gave me a lot of his time. He was very generous, telling me about what was out there. And one of the things that he mentioned was that to access traditional financing as an Indigenous entrepreneur, it's really difficult because, firstly, there's a lot of distrust of banks in the communities, particularly folks who live on reserve. Secondly, to get a loan, you typically need collateral, often your house or property. But when you live on reserve, you can't put your house up as collateral. And so, because the community owns your house, so there's no way to like get those kind of loans. And then the third way to get a loan, and Futurepreneur's option, is to have some sort of credit score. Their limit is pretty low, it's like 650. But if you don't trust banks, you don't often have a credit card or a loan, you don't often have a credit score. And so, there's no way to actually get that money. So while it's a lot of money that's there, the barrier to get it is a little bit too high. So I kept thinking, what if I was like a to create like a stepladder program? So something that could help you develop that credit score. It wouldn't be enough money for you to really get your dream going, probably, because I wouldn't have that much money to give, but it could help create this like, habit of getting credit, paying credit back. It could help develop the credit score, and then it would be a boost, so you could get up to, this level where all the other money is, and now you've got access to it. So I started investigating all of that, talking to them. I reached out to several different banks and organizations, and then we found out that our local Rotary Club in Whippy actually has a microloan called the Capstone Fund that they are already working with, and so we partnered with them. They could provide much more money than we could provide. But we could help with, figuring out application, making sure that the funds are going to the right people, and managing sort of that onboarding process to the loan. And so they gave us a very large pool of money to begin with. And we're still continuing to develop it, bring onboard people. We don't have any recipients of the loan just yet, but we're also working with a few different communities like Akwesasne and in Toronto. It's called the Native Canadian Center of Toronto. Who graduates about 250 Indigenous entrepreneurs from a program called Business and Entrepreneurial Skills Training every year. And so those people are graduating with these skills to start their business. But as the head of the center, Zachariah James, told us, they don't often have the money to take that next step. So now we're there. We can come in, and when they graduate this next program, in a couple months, we'll be there to be like, hey, here's some money. Let's get you started. If you need more, here's the step ladder to all of this other money that's right there. So that's kind of how it got
That's incredible. I don't like, when do you sleep?
going. I'm the opposite. I'm so lazy. I feel like I'm terribly
What?
lazy.
Oh my gosh. You couldn't tell from this conversation. Oh, that's awesome. Thank you so much. Some of this stuff is so intriguing, so interesting. Thank you so much for sharing it all. Thinking about advice, wisdom, thoughts for other students, just getting started. As we were talking about this, trying to figure out where they're going to go to school, what they're going to do for their first job. It seems like, even with the beginnings you had and where you're going right now, that things are falling into place. But what would be your advice or thoughts for students who may be trying to figure out, what should I focus on? Journalism? What should I do? Like, any thoughts around, how to get yourself headed in the right direction?
Yeah, I think the right direction is a tough one because there are so many, and I think I
Very
didn't
true.
know anything about what I wanted to do initially, right? Like I thought, man, I'm definitely going to be a computer scientist, and boy, I'm so far away from being a computer scientist right now. So I think like there's so many options. Don't let like FOMO get you is the first step, right? Like there's I could be an astronaut, I could be a warehouse manager, I could be a trades guy. Like there, all of these are valuable and valid choices. But I would say like the decision paralysis is worse than being wrong. So you have so much time. Life is short, but really you have lots of time. I'm 29 and about to graduate. I started doing this when I was 26 again. And I would say just try something. Like whatever feels pretty appealing initially, look into it. Get started. A lot of the times universities will have like a first year breadth requirement. I know University of Toronto did, and it exposed me to so many other programs that I didn't know existed, like philosophy that I enjoyed, poetry, all of these different things that in high school I would have never thought was something I would be interested in, but I ended up liking a lot. So I would say like if the first thing you get accepted for, it doesn't have to be the thing that you graduate with. I've been through paramedic, transferred to journalism, computer science, and dropped out. There's a lot of different things out there. If entrepreneurship is what you want, really the only prerequisite to that is being curious and being passionate. And so anyone can do that. It doesn't have to be with a degree, as long as you're willing to wonder, I think you can get there. And I think that also translates to life. Never stop being curious, never stop being open-minded, and never stop trying. That's basically what I would say.
Great advice, and I think also pointing out the different paths you went down and figured out wasn't for you, or another thing came up and you switched. That's all about the whole discovery, right? And what better time to discover than when you're in school and at this age? I mean, I don't think you should ever stop discovering. I mean, there's still, things that you come up with and you're like, hey, maybe I'll try this for a while. So different portfolios, different things to do with your time. I think that's a healthy way to live. So thanks for sharing that. I think it was super helpful there. I know we've covered a ton of ground, bounced around a little bit with some of the questions, but is there anything that you wanted to share that maybe I didn't ask you that you thought maybe it would be good to share with the listeners?
That's a good question. It's funny because we always end all of our interviews with this question because it always gets the best answer. I guess like specifically for thinking about your career paths too, maybe journalism right now is in a tough spot. All of us are very aware of a lot of the distrust of journalists and sort of like the heat that the industry is taking right now. I think that it's also okay to like go into something that's maybe getting stigmatized or is stigmatized and trying to be the person who breaks that stigma or because you see the value in it when other people don't. I would say don't be afraid, be courageous with your choices. We're constantly being courageous with our story choices, constantly being courageous with going and talking to people in person, doing interviews face to face with strangers, like all of those things, as I've always cracked my way through that sentence. I would just say, don't be afraid to fail, keep trying, and if you're really, really passionate about something and you know it's the right course of action, and you've done a lot of research and you're still wondering about it, don't let discouragement from others stop you.
Awesome advice. Thank you so much. I'm so glad that our worlds collided for us to talk today. And it's so incredible how Enactus and the founders drive and everything kind of came together. And then here we are, you win the student award and the coffee connection to Coffee with Comedy. It was meant to be. So we're gonna have a real coffee in person one of these days. I'm gonna
Yes,
hold you to
please.
that. And but thank you so much. Thank you so much for talking through your own experience, what you've learned, some of the lessons and tips and tricks for our listeners. It's incredible. I really want to thank you, Andrew, for joining me and being part of the podcast.
I'm so happy to have met you, Brian, and thank you very much for inviting me on here. And I hope I shared something useful in this time that I've taken of yours. So thank
Oh,
you.
you absolutely did. So thank you so much. And for the listeners, if you like what you heard today, please share this podcast with your network on Spotify. Give us a rating. You can follow us on Instagram as well. This has been Coffee with Convery. And until next time, please stay well.